नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 6, entitled Purusha Shukta Confirmed. Text 37, please kindly repeat responsibly. Naham na yuyam yadritam gatim vidur. Na vama deva kim utapare sura. Tanmayaya mohita buddhayas tuidam. Vinirmitam chatma samam vichakshmahe. Word by word translation. Neither. Aham. I. Yuyam, all your sons, yat, whose, ritam, factual, gatim, movements, vidu, do know, na, nor, vamadeva, Lord Shiva, kim, what, uta, else, apare, others, Suraha, demigods, tat, by his, mayaya, by the illusory energy, mohita, bewildered, buddhaya, with such intelligence, to, but, idam, this, vinirmitam, what is created, cha, also, atma samam, by dint of one's personal ability, vichakshmahe, observe. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, His Confounder Acharya, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Since neither Lord Shiva nor you nor I could ascertain the limits of spiritual happiness, how can other demigods know it? And because all of us are bewildered by the illusory external energy of the Supreme Lord, we can see only this manifested cosmos according to our individual ability. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. We have many times mentioned the names of 12 selected authorities, Dvadasha, Mahajan, of which Brahman, Narada and Lord Shiva head the list as the first, second and third in order of merit of those who know something of the Supreme Lord. Other demigods, semi-demigods, Gandharvas, Charanas, Vidyadharas, human beings or Asuras cannot possibly know fully about the potencies of the Absolute Lord, Shri Krishna. The demigods, semi-demigods, Gandharvas, etc. are all highly intelligent persons in the upper planets, the human beings are inhabitants of the intermediate planets, and the asuras are inhabitants of the lower planets. All of them have their respective conceptions and estimations of the absolute truth, as does the scientist or the empiric philosopher in human society. All such living entities are creatures of the material nature, and consequently they are bewildered by the wonderful display of the three modes of material nature. Such bewilderment is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita 7.13. Tribihir gunamayir, gunamayir bhaver ebihi sarvam idam jagat. Every entity beginning from Brahma down to the ant is individually bewildered by the three modes of material nature, namely goodness, passion and ignorance. Everyone thinks in terms of individual capacity, that this universe which is manifested before us is all in all. And so the scientist in the human society of the 20th century calculates the beginning and the end of the universe in his own way. But what can the scientist know? Even Brahma himself was once bewildered, thinking himself the only one Brahma favored by the Lord. But later on, by the grace of the Lord, he came to know that there are innumerable more powerful Brahmas as well, in far bigger universes beyond this universe. And all of these universes combined together from Ekapad Vibhuti, or one-fourth of the manifestation of the Lord's creative energy. The other three-fourths of His energy are displayed in the spiritual world. And so, what can the tiny scientist with a tiny brain know of the Absolute Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna? The Lord says, therefore, Mohitam Nabhijanati Mam Ebyaha Param Abhyayam. Bewildered by such modes of material nature, they cannot understand that beyond these manifestations is the Supreme Person, who is the absolute controller of everything. Brahma, Narada and Lord Shiva know about the Lord to a considerable extent, and therefore one should follow the instructions of these great personalities instead of being satisfied with the tiny brain and its playful discoveries, such as a spacecraft and the similar products of science. As the mother is the only authority to identify the father of a child, so the mother Vedas, presented by the recognized authority such as Brahma, Narada or Shiva, is the only authority to inform us about the Absolute Truth. So, here Lord Brahma continues his conclusions on the exposition of the Absolute Truth. And he actually humbles himself by saying that who can really understand the Absolute Truth in fully? Even in one sense, Krishna himself doesn't understand fully himself to a total extent. This was stated yesterday in the verse. Just like the sky doesn't know its own limits. Similarly, the Lord Himself is unable to estimate His own limits. So, sounds like a contradictory statement that the Lord cannot estimate His own limits, but actually, this is the nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Krishna may not know something and then He'll know it. You know, this is actually how Prabhupada explained. Krishna may, due to His amazing energies, something may just, you know, some of His energies may act in a certain amazing way, but then Krishna will immediately understand, because He is ultimately the source of these energies. So He has that capacity to discover Himself all the time, rediscover Himself. And in this way, the Absolute Truth is not static. Krishna is not just static, standing there and then, you know, this is it. He is ever fresh, ever refreshing Himself, and ever knowing and understanding Himself. When Krishna refreshes, He transforms Himself, then He is bewildered by His transformation, and then He understands that transformation. So even the Absolute Truth Himself, who is Sat, eternal, full of bliss and full of knowledge, is constantly expanding and refreshing and transforming Himself. This is actually how we can understand this statement by Brahma, that even the Lord doesn't understand Himself fully, at least for some time, and then He understands. That makes Him the Lord, that He can fully understand Himself. So, one time, just trying to remember which, the name of that Swami, Bhakti Brihad Bhagavat Swami Maharaj, he said that completeness means that, you know, in order for Krishna to be complete, that means there must be some incompleteness within the completeness. You know, so this can be understood in that way, that Krishna sometimes doesn't fully understand Himself, and then he understands himself. So like that. So this is part of Krishna's transcendental nature, ever dynamic and ever expanding. So here Brahma is very humbly stating that I know a little bit about the Lord, but I cannot know the Lord in full. Even Lord Shiva, even you Narada, do not fully understand the Lord. So this is in one sense the humility of Brahma, but in another sense it is the reality. Because Brahma is, as Prabhupada points in the purport, one of perhaps millions of Brahmas. And some of these Brahmas are much more qualified than our four-headed Brahma. And still even they have to submit to Krishna and bow down to Krishna. Even they don't fully understand who Krishna is. These superbly intelligent, from a material point of view, entities with tremendous capacity to run whole universes, still they cannot fully understand. Sorry. So Krishna only can be understood by revelation. Bhakti mam abhijanati evam yashca smi tatvadaha tato mam tatvata getva vishati tadanataram. That I can only be understood by pure devotional service. And then in that pure devotional service, Krishna reveals himself. To the devotee, proportionate to his or her level of surrender. So, here Prabhupada is stating in this purport, in the final sentence, that we should accept the Vedas as the absolute authority. And the Vedas are saying that in order to understand the absolute truth, we have to have a guru. This is the statement of the Vedas. In the Upanishads, there's many, many different statements where it is said that one should approach a bona fide spiritual master. So, if we have the Vedas, why do we need a guru? You know, we just read the Vedas and get the message. The answer is that there are very few people who may come in contact with the Vedas, and even those who come in contact with the Vedas, just by reading the Vedas, may not fully, most of the people may not fully really understand what's the purport of the Vedas. Because the Vedas can be very complex, sometimes very abstract, like the Upanishads, philosophical treatises, very difficult to understand. And one may need an adept practitioner of Vedic knowledge to be able to penetrate the truths that have been revealed in the Vedas. And this is just for the people who know about the Vedas, but you know, what about the others who do not know? They have completely no hope of understanding what is the purpose of life, what's the origin, because the Vedas are revealing what's the origin of life. What is the purpose of life in a very systematic, scientific way that leads to, like I said, upgrading of consciousness and upgrading of behavior of the person who reads and studies the Vedas. So the proof that the Vedic knowledge is valid is seen in the transformation of the student of the Vedas, that he becomes not only a better person, but he or she can become an excellent gentle person, gentle man or gentle lady, like Prabhupada said. For example, the story of Mrigari the hunter. He was killing the animals, killing them so badly, but not fully killing them, and he would leave them to die in tremendous pain, and he would just enjoy seeing that. You know, he was so cruel. And such a person as Mrigari, by meeting Narada Muni, he became completely transformed. He became completely transformed to the point that he would not even step on an ant. And there is that story when Narada was coming to see Mrigari. When Mrigari saw his guru coming down the path in the village, and then he started very briskly walking towards his guru. But Narada noticed that he was going in a zigzag fashion. You know, he was not going straight. He was going like that. So when he reached him, he said, "My dear disciple," when he offered obeisances and got up to greet his guru, he said, "My dear disciple, I saw while you were coming towards me, you were actually going in a zigzag way. Why are you not walking straight? What is something wrong with you? Are you sick or something, you know? Can't you keep balance? I'm sure you're not drunk." Probably you can't keep balance, you know, you're not maybe sick or something. And Mrigari said to him, "No, my dear Guru Maharaj, actually I'm walking like this because on the path there were some different ants, some kind of lines of ants. So I was trying to circumvent them and not to kill them. So that's why I was going like that." So you can see how such a cruel man, by becoming contacted by a pure devotee who represents the Vedas, he becomes completely transformed. So this is the validity of the Vedas. This is why we accept the Vedas as an authority. If anything in this world can transform people like that, then we should accept that, whatever knowledge it is wonderful. But of course, in my own experience, I never saw anything more wonderful, transformative than the Vedas. So the proof of the pudding is in the eating, and there is specific, you know, for ourselves. You know, if we want to experience the value of the Vedas, then we have to follow them. And also when we look at others who follow the Vedas, what is their transformation, then we can understand the validity in that way and the value. So Prabhupada is saying the Vedas are the recognized authority, and they are presented by Brahma, Narada, Shiva as the only authority to inform us about the absolute truth. Vedas means the sound vibration of the Lord. You see, so the Lord is communicating. It's like the email of the Lord for this world. You know, He's communicating His message to us because we cannot see Him. So we have to receive an email. Just like I cannot see someone in Europe right now. You know, I've got no direct darshan of some person in Europe, but he can email me, you know, and I can get some kind of message from them. So in the same way, the Vedas have been brought into this world by Krishna's mercy. First he delivered the Vedas to Brahma, and then Brahma in turn gave it to Narada, then Vyasa, and then there is the cyclic line of teachers who have brought this Vedic knowledge down to our modern day. Thanks to Srila Prabhupada, who kept this parampara alive and, you know, offering us this opportunity. So, in modern world, a lot of the people today, there is this fashion all over the world. We don't need a guru, you know. There is this big fashion everywhere. Whether it's Facebook, whether it's some yoga magazines, you see this message coming through again and again. You become your own guru. We don't need a guru. So, how do we respond to such messages? What is guru? How do we understand ourselves? You know, this guru, you know, how do you understand what is guru? So first of all, we all can admit that we are born in ignorance. I don't think anyone will, any sane man will say, I was completely enlightened from birth. Right? Any one of you here that was like that? So, what is the proof that you are not enlightened? We thought we are the body. You thought I am this flesh. I was born, here is my mother and father. They produced me. I didn't exist before. Now I am existing because they produced me. And then after some time I shall go in the grave and I shall cease to exist. And this is me, this is my life. So everyone thought like that. And unless your parents were, of course, Vaishnavas, and they, from very small, they told you that you're not the body, but, you know, generally we are all born in ignorance, identifying with this material body. So, if someone is born in ignorance, he does need a guru. You see, it's a fact. You need a guru if you're in ignorance. And in the Vedas, there is this famous statement that the first guru in your life is your mother and your father. How does it go? Someone know? Guru Mata? No, what was it? Guru Pita? What was that? Huh?
Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Deva, Maheshwara.
No. Not that one, no. You should know these things.
Yeah, then actually forward. Then his brother is the next guru, the elder brother, and then comes the Shiksha Guru, the teachers, those
who. Yeah. So the family, the mother and the father, the first gurus. When we are small, we are completely dependent on the mother and the father. You can't feed yourself. The mother has to feed you, otherwise you'll die. The baby is screaming. He doesn't even know why he's screaming. You know. Of course, he doesn't even know why he's screaming. He just feels some pain. He doesn't know that the pain is there because he is hungry. He's got no idea that because he's hungry. He just feels some pain there. He doesn't know that the pain is due to hunger. And he just screams. But the mother knows what is the disease of the child. And she feeds the child. So, we are completely dependent on mother, on father. Like there is a saying, when we are small, we don't even know how to tie a shoelace. You know? Did you know how to tie your shoelace? The father must come and show you, or the mother, you do like this, like that, you know. And we are so enlightened, we can't even tie our shoelace, and we, Mahabhagavats, we don't need guru, you know. This is the philosophy now that is permeating our society. So, they say we don't need guru, we can reach enlightenment alone. Yesterday I was reading in one blog, some blog of deluded people, you know, propagating. There was one picture of one disciple bowing down before the guru and one Brahman guru like this standing in front of him, and then it was written, you know, something like, we are living in the age where we don't need this anymore, something like that. So this is the propaganda that goes on. So that made me think, you know, how do I relate to these people? And I actually engaged with them a bit, and then I saw where they are. I'll tell you now. So, basically, first I pointed out to these people that because you know, we are in ignorance, we need a spiritual master. And then the response of the guru of these people, you know, who says that she is not their guru, you know. She responded like this by saying that some people may need guru, but I don't want to be extreme, she's saying, you know. I don't want to be extreme whether we need guru or we don't need. Some people may need guru and some people may not need guru. You know, that was her answer, not to be extreme, to be politically correct with everyone. You know, that was her. Very intelligent, huh? You know. So, sorry, too loud. So, and basically, I was saying to them that, okay, I'm a fool. I'm a foolish person. And if you are all enlightened, or some of you, then what can you tell all of you, one foolish person like me, you know? What is the goal of life? What is, you know, what can I learn from you? You said that some people may need a guru. I need a guru, so what can you tell me? What can you tell me, you know, about life? And she said, well, I can just tell you that everyone's path is different. Everyone's path is different. You know this mantra, you've heard it before? Everyone has a different path. Everyone's path is different. That's what I can tell you. So I said, the path to where? You know. And she said, but you're asking too many questions, you know. You have to discover this yourself. Something like that, she told me, you know. And she said, anyways, you know, we will probably not agree if we have this discussion, so let me just enjoy the sunshine. She wrote to me like that. It's very nice sunshine outside. So I said, okay, you know, you can have fun, but I told her one thing. I said to her that, you know, a real friend is someone who makes the other person think about certain existential questions in life. And because with your post you made me think about Guru Tattva, you are my real friend. Thank you very much. I ended like this the conversation. So, basically you can see how much bewilderment is there in this material world. You know. Now what is Guru? I had some few realizations here this morning. So, Guru is first and foremost one who represents the Vedic knowledge as it is. Why the Vedic knowledge and why not any other knowledge? So, I go back to my first point. Because the Vedic knowledge, from my experience, I've seen people who follow this Vedic knowledge to be the best people in the world. Therefore, that knowledge must be the topmost knowledge. Do you agree with that logical argument? Yes? Does it make sense? If you see someone who follows the Vedas to be the best person, the best lady or the best gentleman, that indicates for the caliber of the knowledge. Do you agree with this? Yes? So in that way, so Guru is one who presents the Vedic knowledge as it is, number one. This is how we can understand. Second, he is a person who points to the highest aim of life. Within the Vedic knowledge, he is not just pointing at any other level of Vedic knowledge. There is many different levels of Vedic knowledge, but he points to the highest aim of life, which is, in our case, we understand Krishna Prema, love of God. So Guru is someone who points to the highest aim of life. He does not go for liberation or for artha, kama, moksha, you know, all these different things. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. He goes beyond these four goals of the Vedas. And he points to purushartha, the fifth topmost goal. This is actually an authentic guru. So he points to the highest aim of life. He gives us the method for by which we can achieve this highest aim in life. This is the second point. He gives us the method. Third, he teaches us how to apply the method. This is a guru. He points to the highest aim, then he gives us the method, this is how you achieve, and then he helps us to understand how to practice this method to achieve. Yeah, this is the next point. Then, the next point is based on the caliber of the guru. He creates facilities for the practice. When you look at Prabhupada or his illustrious disciples, they are creating facilities for the people to practice. You know, so for us, you know, those who are just coming, up and coming, for us, we Prabhupada just, he didn't just point out Krishna is God, the goal of life is Krishna Prema, the method is chanting Hare Krishna, and then that's it, he just left. No, he created a whole institution, a whole safety net to protect the jiva, the soul, from maya, and to engage us in service. He created facility for the disciples to actually make advancement. And that means a lot of sacrifice. Prabhupada didn't sleep more than 4 hours a day to actually create this powerful network with so much facility so that the jiva can be safeguarded from illusion. Can you see what so many levels of so many aspects are there within the personality of Guru? It's not just some man with long beard and, you know, some saffron robes presenting himself as Guru. There is so many different aspects. Then the next thing is he leads by example. And the, you know, living the teachings by example and basically help us to help us the disciple to be delivered from samsara, from illusion. This is another aspect of Guru. He is practically helping the disciple to get out of the three modes of material nature. So this is another aspect, and he shows this by his own example. Prabhupada is exemplary, for example, and his sincere disciples, they walk, they talk. So Guru is not someone who just preaches, but then he doesn't do. He is actually the carrier of this example that he wants to see us doing, you know, these practices and so on and so forth. So, Guru comes in parampara. It's not that just some person can pick up the Vedas and then say, I am Guru, you know. No, he comes in parampara. And now, what is the significance of parampara? It means that he recognizes that the Lord exists and that the Lord constantly sends different messengers to this world to keep this message intact. You know, again and again. Whenever parampara is broken, Krishna sends someone. Or he comes himself. So in other words, parampara represents first of all that there is God, because the Vedas don't originate from men. Like some anthropologists, they say the Vedas were written by human beings at different time and different place. but actually, parampara means that the Vedas come from God, because the origin of the Vedas must be coming from the Supreme Person. It can't just come by a human being writing such perfect things, because if a human being can come up with writing such perfect things, then we don't need God to give us these perfect things. You understand? So parampara is there to show that God exists, and all these perfect things, they come from Him and they are passed down. So the different gurus, they can just realize the Vedic knowledge rather than come up concocted out of their intellectual capacity. So this parampara means that the Lord exists eternally, and then this disciplic succession that presents His message again and again is being brought into the public eye in this material world. Right? This is... So there are different types of guru also. As as you know, Prabhupada explains there is a few types of guru, Vartma Pradakshika Guru, sometimes known as Pata Pradakshika Guru, one who shows you the way. There is a Shiksha Guru, there is a Diksha Guru. So these are varieties of gurus that exist. And basically when one is trained by all these varieties of gurus, he or she can see that guru or their guru, his or her gurus everywhere, even within the nature. You know, plants and animals, they can teach something that will help you to come closer to Krishna. So the whole world can ultimately become your guru. Even like in the Bhagavatam is explained that this prostitute became the guru of this Brahman, you see. He even learned something from her, but he accepted knowledge from that prostitute, from her behavior, because he already knew what's the conclusion. It's not that he didn't know and he accepted that knowledge from her separately from the what his guru has taught him, you see. So it is very, very important to understand how we can actually see the whole world as guru. You first have to honor completely the teachings of your Diksha and Shiksha Guru. And also by surrendering to a guru, we are showing that we honor Krishna's teachings, Krishna's method for delivering us from this material world, because Krishna wanted us to have a guru. In fact, Krishna himself, Prabhupada many times he mentions, he took himself a guru, Sandipani Muni, and later on, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he accepted Ishwarapuri as his guru, you see. So even Krishna himself, when he descends down into this world, he shows the example by accepting a guru. He's the topmost person, he doesn't need a guru, he knows everything, but at the same time, he acts for the benefit of others. So you can see how people are so confused and so misled by thinking we don't need gurus, everyone can become his own guru. But when you ask them, okay, what is the goal of your life? What are you trying to achieve? You know, the best thing they can say is to merge within God, you know, through their own concoction. That's the best thing they can come up with from material kind of intelligence. And probably they have heard this somewhere else as well. It's not that they just came up with it. They heard it from another so-called guru. And so this is the great confusion. And therefore, we have to recognize, you know, I am confused. I need a guru. You have to recognize this. And if you have a guru, how are you honoring your guru? You know, or gurus, you know, Shiksha and Diksha. And how are you honoring your Vartma Pradakshika Guru, the person who brought you to the path? You see. Because if you are not honoring, that means you are not honoring Krishna. Because guru represents the Lord in this material world. So the spiritual master is representative of prema. He is actually one who is endowed with prema, with love of Krishna, and who is inspiring us also to develop our love for Krishna. There is a saying that guru is the only wealth in this material world. The only wealth, the only asset is guru. And then that is confirmed by this Guru Vastakam song, Yasha Prashada Bhagavat Prashada, Yasha Prashada Nagati Kutopi. Without the mercy of the spiritual master, we cannot achieve anything in terms of spiritual success. So this is being repeated again and again all over Shastra, the importance of Guru. Bhakti Tirtha Swami, my Guru Maharaj, before he left this world, one time I was confused and doing some speculative things and acting in a very foolish way. So he was trying to enlighten me, but I was not hearing because I was such a fool, you know. And he pulled me in his office and he pointed out, he said, you know, Yasha Prashada Bhagavat Prashada, Yasha Prashada Nagati Kutopi, without the mercy of Guru, nothing is possible. So he asked me, who is your Guru? You know, because I was following some other person who was bewildered, and I knew he is bewildered, but because he was in a position, then I didn't have the strength to say something, you know, about what he's doing. I was thinking in a sentimental way, Krishna will fix the problem, but not realizing that while I'm doing this, I'm getting contaminated by some materialistic thinking, lack of faith in acting properly. Just try to think about this sentence, lack of faith in acting properly. You know, you lose faith to act properly and you start to act improperly. So then, Gurudev pointed out that this is it. And then you have to be clear, who is your guru? And then if you decide who is your guru, then follow. Don't just be a pretender, you know. So in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, he was a friend of Krishna, right? But at the first chapter, when the first chapter finishes of the Gita, we see a transformation. Arjuna moves from the position of friend to a disciple. He becomes a disciple of Krishna. He asks Krishna for that because Arjuna is very intelligent. So he realizes that I'm very confused. Why? Because Arjuna was quoting the Vedas and friends, sometimes the friend may say something and then the other friend can oppose him. You know, this is like friends communicating. Everyone comes with different ideas and it's friendship and it's kind of acceptable to have different opinions within the friendship. But when we have Guru, there's no way of having different opinion, because if you have different opinion, then why do you need a Guru? You understand? And if you don't need a Guru, then you become Guru and deliver others if you are Guru. You know? You see? So, this must be understood, that when you accept a spiritual master, one should not argue with the Guru. Try to present himself as more intelligent than the Guru. That is foolishness number one. Yeah. And we should be very careful not to instruct the Guru or a senior devotee. It's very, very dangerous stuff. One time I was so foolish, there was one senior Prabhupada disciple, and he was supposed to give a talk at some university, and he asked me what should I speak on, and I was feeling like, you know, when I spoke to him, I was so like, I was so controlling, I was trying to control him what to say, you know, what to speak to this. I was so insecure, I could actually feel it later on, that in my heart I almost like committed an offense because I'm telling him what to speak. So we have so much garbage in our hearts, you know, and when you interact with devotees, then it comes out. But you have to know what is right to be able to identify, you know. So that means we need training. We need training. We need some real spiritual masters there. And yeah, this is, you know, that's why it's sometimes senior devotees can treat us friendly, but we should be careful that they may treat us friendly, but then we may start to boss them around or try to be more intelligent than them. Then we enter into some hot waters, you know. It's very dangerous. Unless, you know, it's dangerous that because we can make an offense, so we can actually lose their affection, the mercy that they are giving us by offending them. They can withdraw their mercy. Because if you are arrogant, they may think, oh, you're so intelligent and you don't need my advice. And they may withdraw from advising you. It's very, very dangerous stuff. Because they see this, some pride is coming, you know, so they withdraw. And so we have to approach the bona fide spiritual master in a mood of humility. Humility doesn't mean fear. Humility means love and affection and recognizing our fallen position, you know. So don't become paralyzed by fear. I don't want to offend this guru, you know. Not like that, you know. You just be humble, you know. Guru Maharaj, I am a fool number one. Please instruct me, you know. Like this, very simple. And then render service. If you really want to follow the process, then render service to the spiritual masters or to the devotees. Render some service. Help the devotees. Prabhupada was saying in one lecture, I was hearing yesterday, I think, in the West, the Westerners sometimes they don't even pronounce the word guru properly. They say garu sometimes. He is a garu of this movement. Prabhupada said garu means cow. He's laughing in that lecture. He's speaking to his disciples. He said, sometimes you're calling me cow, you know, but I'm still accepting because I can see your mood. The mood is humble and you are saying out of ignorance rather than some other kind of contamination. So Prabhupada said, you may even say like this, I accept your heart. And Krishna, he said, Krishna is Bhava Graha Janardhanam. He sees the essence. Even if you can't chant his name properly, he sees the essence, he sees your heart. So similarly, Guru sees like that, the essence of our consciousness when we come to them. We may make some mistake or something, but the spiritual master sees the heart, really. So, what I'm trying to say is that the accepting of a spiritual master is of a crucial importance. And understanding also the value of having a spiritual master, the tremendous value, because the spiritual master can lead us to prema. Sometimes we hear that the holy name is enough for you to achieve prema, and you don't even need to take initiation. That is true. But if you are chanting the holy name offensively, you cannot attain. So again, the guru is there to show you how not to chant offensively, you see, so that you can access really the holy name. So guru is not some kind of a patriarchal figure, you know, like some people say, who is just living on the back of others or something like this in the modern world, and therefore they want to abandon the system and they can just speculate about life. Guru is someone who is actually a servant of his own guru. He represents his own guru and he's a caretaker. He's actually taking care of the disciple. He's like a parent. It's a spiritual parent. You see. So it is very, very important that we honor guru as it's supposed to be done. Because yasha prashada bhagavat prashada yasha prashada nagati kutopi. Without the mercy of the spiritual master, there is no hope in achieving success in understanding the Vedas. The Vedas may be the authority of everything, the absolute truth, as Prabhupada is pointing out here at the end. But if you don't have a guide, a pure devotee of the Lord who understands the essence of the Vedas, you will get confused and bewildered. And again, you know, we will take another birth into this material world. So finally, the final thing I wanted to share with you is that Prabhupada writes in the third canto at the end of I believe second last chapter. I don't know whether it's 31 or 32. You can see for yourself. I think it's second last chapter, the teachings of Lord Kapila. The final about 10 verses of that chapter. Then Kapila Dev is teaching Devahuti about Guru. what is an authentic guru, and then what is an authentic disciple is also there. So Prabhupada is speaking in the purport that disciple should not be envious of his guru. He should not be envious, in fact, of anyone. And if a guru sees that the disciple is a non-envious person, then, or the candidate for disciple, then he can accept him as disciple. So the guru must actually look at the candidate whether he has envy, you know. So this very high quality of accepting a disciple, be free of envy, someone who is very humble, you know. Because humility and envy don't go together. So if you really want to approach guru, you must become free of envy. And one should be understanding that accepting shelter of guru means that I have to carry the order of the spiritual master. Not that you accept the guru as a fashion, as a rock star, you put a picture on the wall, just like these big rock stars, the children, the teenagers, they have these big posters in their room, and basically worship them in that way, following all the negative things this rock star is doing, but really having no appreciation for the rock star. It's just kind of in an enjoying spirit. This guy is making nice music for me to enjoy, therefore I worship him. Guru is giving me some nice things, therefore I'll worship him. But if he chastises me, then I give up on him. That is nonsense. It's like some kid may put the poster of this rock star in the 2013 year, and then 2014 he's bored, throws him in the bin and he puts another one there. Like that. This is all nonsense. So, one other realization I had, I forgot to tell you, that this is very, very important. Why we need guru? Because the spiritual master, bona fide spiritual master, he creates an atmosphere of relationship building based on Krishna. An atmosphere of building relationships around Krishna. Krishna-centered relationships. This is why it is so important to have a guru, because he can bring people together. We've seen it, and we're seeing it now again in our modern ISKCON. A bona fide guru, he knows how to bring people together from all walks and talks, from all different backgrounds, different ages. And, you know, this is actually, you can only do this if you love the people, to bring them together, to cooperate, to try to reach out and help others, if you love the people. So, guru is not this artificial kind of thing, you know. Guru is someone who can really engender unity with the diversity within many different people coming together and forming a community, you know. This is very powerful stuff. And if you look at these impersonalist gurus, they most of them, if they form some community, even if they form a community, it is very unfortunate, because it is formed around an imperfect realization of the absolute truth. I guess, you know, in some sense it is better than being a materialist, but in another sense, to be a Mayavadi is actually a greater curse. So, depending. But what I'm trying to say is that the guru has that potency to unite people, make them cooperate, and prepare them for the spiritual world. It's actually there. And we see these notions of we don't need guru, everyone can be a guru, then every person becomes alienated from others. And people don't have relationships anymore. They just superficial, on the surface, blindly speaking some slogans, such as this is a slogan, you know, you don't need gurus, you can be your own guru. Even there was one pop band some years ago, they had a song, You are your own Jesus. I'm sure you heard some years ago some band came up with this very famous song, You Are Your Own Jesus. You heard that? So this is the confusion in this material world. So we see in this fragmented modern society, extremely fragmented, there is no more family institution. There is no more even organizations, spiritual organizations that are functioning for the benefit of others, except what I'm seeing in ISKCON. And most of the people are just either unable, they may have the good sentiment to serve others, but they may be unable to know what is the best for people, you see. So it's so much confusion that goes on in this world. So what is left for us in conclusion? In conclusion, we have to understand Lord Chaitanya's mission, that he expects us to become representatives of his in this world. All of us in our small capacity, whatever it may be, to try to understand how to serve others, how to help others, how to inspire others to take to the mission of Srila Prabhupada. And if you live with integrity, then people will be attracted to you and they will be eager to follow you. You know, both men and women. Because friendship will not help. I'm repeating this again. Friendship doesn't help. Friendship is just when you're Mahabhagavat and you meet another Mahabhagavat, you can be friends. Or you can be friend on a, you know, like a Madhyam Adhikari, say, level. You've got some genuinely beneficial friendships, you know. But below that, even on a Kanista level, there is so much politics and war that goes on. So genuine friendship is either on Madhyam or on Uttama, you know. And that is just sharing a sweetness, sharing Krishna's sweetness that exists in these friendships. But if some person on a low level, spiritual level, tries to artificially become your friend, can become very dangerous. You know, because you'll never be able to help them if they just treat you as a friend. Because whatever you say, they'll say something else. It's just useless, just a waste of time. If you see someone wants to keep you as a friend, you just, you know, like if someone is a junior person and you try to give them nice advice whenever is required, but you see they just try to treat you as a friend and ignore everything that you're giving, then you should you know, keep that relationship as what you call it, as almost like a formality, you know. You just form, you know, in a formal way you appreciate the person, but you don't have to get too involved in guiding them or whatever, because they won't accept, you know. So these are very subtle things, and I am realizing these things these days at the position of where I am, because, you know, things are changing for me. I'm changing myself as a devotee, and I'm experiencing different things, and I'm seeing different things, and I'm learning different things, and Krishna is preparing us for bigger and bigger things, but you have to learn certain lessons at each and every level. So I'm just telling you what, you know, I am learning now, so what you can observe and think about your own life and look at your own consciousness and behavior and try to always strive for higher levels of consciousness. So thank you for giving me your audience. I will take some questions from all of you. Thank you for being very attentive. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah. Any comments, questions? Yes, Bhakti Sarprabhu.
Still we need to maintain some friendship also.
Yes. So, like I said, you know, I said a formal kind of respect. You give a respect to the person. Because you can't really develop a real, real friendship if the person has a material consciousness towards you. If he thinks this is my equal, and you know he treats you in that way while you're, you know, senior by position, then you can't really by position or by years in the movement, by initiation, so on and so forth. And if you try to treat them nicely, with the aim of uplifting the person, you know, lovingly, caringly, but they don't understand, they disregard that, and they have still this kind of an edge that I am like this, and you know, I am kind of independent, I don't have to get your advice, whatever. Even if you try to make them feel good and happy, if they don't accept the guidance that we may share with them, sometimes a little advice, then we know that this person is not, you know, eager to at least receive from me. Therefore, not to offend them, we should treat them with respect from a distance like that. And we may be friendly, we may say something nice, pat them on the back, sometimes give a hug to such a person, you know, but that doesn't mean that, you know, basically, you're intimately sharing something with them because they don't want it. You know? So that's the balance, to see where the person is, but at the same time not to offend the person, because he may get the message of Krishna consciousness, he may be inspired by another person, it may not that be we have to teach them the intricacies of bhakti. So he may be inspired by someone else, then we should respect that he has his free will, you know, like that. But at the same time, we cannot allow, you know, frivolously to treat them, to treat us frivolously, because that they will make an offense. You may not take the offense yourself, but they may offend someone else by treating them, because they'll be used to treat you in a frivolous way. They'll go to another senior person and they'll treat them, and that person may take an offense. So that will not be good for them. So it's part of the training, if someone becomes too frivolous as a junior devotee, to mildly correct them, you know, and respectfully, like that. And if they don't take our advice, then we can approach the temple commander or the temple president or something, you know, to maybe address the issue with them. So, but first we have to speak to them directly. Otherwise it becomes almost like politics. You go behind them to someone else. So we have to approach first the actual devotee and try. And if they disregard that, then we know that they can't accuse us. We didn't speak to them first. They can't accuse us in making politics, because we tried but it didn't work. So then we can actually take it. So, but, you know, respect. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj once said something very interesting, which we should always keep in mind. He said an advanced devotee makes the other person always to feel that they are more advanced than themselves. This is very interesting. So, you know, like, it's almost like an Uttama Adhikari platform. You know, an advanced devotee makes always the other person feel that they are more advanced than themselves. But Aniruddha Prabhu pointed out nicely the other day that if you see that sometimes the devotee is damaging himself, you can immediately, you know, try to correct him and act as a master in the service of Krishna, you know, to correct. But of course you have to be careful whether they'll accept or not. You know, you have to be, we shouldn't expect that everyone will accept our advice. You see, because some people may not want to take it from us. So we can try a little bit, and if we see that it's not going anywhere, then who else can help, you know. So these are some very kind of fine nuances that we need to learn. Yeah, is that okay? Hare Krishna. Yes, Krishna Prem Prabhu, and then sorry Prabhuji, I don't know your name. Yeah, Krishna Prem Prabhu first. Yeah. Speak louder, please. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There are four personified Vedas. They are glorifying Krishna. They appeared when Brahma stole the cows, you know, the cowherd boys. And when Krishna manifested the four-arm form from all the cows and all the cowherd boys, then Brahma understood this is none other than the Supreme Lord. So he came down, offered obeisances. He actually saw before that how the four Vedas appeared. The material energy Durga appeared and offered obeisances to the Lord. So then he realized, I made a mess. So the Vedas are persons actually. Yeah. And they appear and disappear depending on the service they're doing for the Lord. Sometimes the living entities have to forget about the Vedas because they abuse them, like Buddha. He rejected the Vedas because they were abusing the Vedas. So then they kind of withdrew themselves, and then gradually Shankara brought them in, and then Madhvacharya and Ramanuja, etc. They brought Vaishnavism again. Yeah, they are persons. In the spiritual world, everything is personal there. You can talk to a stone. Everything is conscious. Yeah, it's amazing. Yes, Prabhu?
Prabhu, one gets guru by the mercy of Krishna. So, what makes, in what situation that Krishna decides to bestow that mercy? Because everyone doesn't get guru selected.
Why not everyone gets a guru? And why some people get a guru? Actually, to get a guru in this world is so rare. Bona fide guru. It's explained, I don't know whether Prabhupada gave this example, but it's a very good example. If there is a turtle in the ocean, somewhere in the Pacific Ocean, and if you throw one wooden log with a hole on it, in the sea, in the ocean, here in the Melbourne beach, you throw it, and kill the beach. So what is the chance that this turtle will come out of the water to the surface, and then at the same time this log will be floating on the water, and then the turtle's head will go through the hole? What is the chance? It is almost impossible. So to get a guru is almost impossible, you know. So in fact, if you don't get a guru, is the more normal thing in this world. Then if you get a guru, you should be shocked. Oh, how I got a guru. It's amazing, because this material world is a difficult place. So does Krishna have favorites? Not really. Prabhupada was pointing out in Science of Self-Realization, when the disciple is ready, the guru appears. So when the person is sick and tired of this material world, crying out due to suffering, you know, what is the goal of life? Who can teach me what is truth? Then the guru appears, you know, for that kind of person. And now, even you can see, even if the guru is in front of his eyes, some people will not be able to recognize. So because he's got no desperation to understand. This is the quality of a disciple. He's desperate to know the truth. You know. So this is why people are not getting, because they're not desperate. There's still some Maya is too strong. They're thinking, I am enjoying, I am making it. You know. So like that. This is very unfortunate that this goes on, but this is the material world, and One thing we can do is plant seeds. That's the only thing we can do. By giving them Prabhupada's books, giving them prasadam, and making friends with them. Be socially polite towards people. Be kind, speak some nice words to them. Like Prabhupada with John Lennon's gardener, he said to him, "Good morning, sir, how are you this morning?" He didn't say Hare Krishna to him. He said, "Good morning, how are you, sir?" He was doing the garden of John Lennon, you know. So the gardener became a British gentleman. He was, "Oh, he's greeting me, good morning, sir, how are you? I'm very happy today," you know. So he was seeing gurus in front of him, but he was not recognizing who is Prabhupada. So Prabhupada, in order to empower him in the future to recognize, he greeted him, he treated him nicely, he didn't ignore him, this karma idiot, you know. "I'll just go forward, you know, I'm not going to greet him." No, Prabhupada was polite. "How are you this morning?" You see. "Good morning." Then on another occasion, Prabhupada said, "When they say good morning, it means that nothing horrible has happened yet." You know, when they say good morning, "How are you?" it means nothing horrible has happened yet in the material world, you know. But still, that's between devotees, you know, that material world, at any moment something horrible can happen. But still, we use the social etiquette to treat people, to plant some seeds in the heart out of compassion. So although they may have no chance, but somehow or other this person has appeared in front of you, be kind to him, you see. And then that kindness hopefully will open the heart, you see. Hare Krishna. From the ladies' side, one question, please. Otherwise, it's just a male conversation. Anything about Guru?
Can I ask a question?
Of course, you're most welcome, ma'am.
As a newcomer,
yes.
When you're talking about gurus,
yes.
You're saying that a guru can present themselves just as a regular person.
In a sense, he can treat others just down to earth. He can say good morning. He can.
I mean, within this environment, that would connect them to something else. But in this environment, you're saying that it might affect others.
Yeah, of course. I mean, if someone like you visits, and if there is a spiritual master, he may say to you, "How are you? How are you this morning?" They may just treat you, you know, absolutely according to what is acceptable. As normal behavior, they will probably do that because they want to make you feel included and inspired. Not that, you know, "I'm so great and you're so low," something like that. No, they want to, you know, come down to the platform, to the level where you are, to try to inspire that inquisitiveness, that devotion. And then later on you'll understand, wow, this person is up there and I'm down here. Then you, by yourself, you want to follow what they say. You will see that trying to solve your problems on your own, you will always run up into more problems and more problems, you know, because of the level of consciousness we have. But we see that person is not only that he doesn't or she doesn't have problems the way we have, but they also help in others. And that will give you the confidence that this person is special, you see. And then a guru is someone who doesn't just want to remain guru themselves. They will train you up how you can become a guru and how you can help others. That's a guru. You see. You see, this is wonderful. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Premanandi.